This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
All right, Sandy Rios with you, filling in for Tony Perkins today. I host the mornings show for American Family Radio. I also represent the American Family Association here in Washington as their director of governmental affairs. Tonight is the huge debate. 100 million people expected to tune in. And yes, we're going to talk about it plenty. But I don't want to get things out of order because I think the most important thing to communicate with you just in the moment is a story just out of Houston. Let's listen.
Early this morning, panic breaks out in a shopping center parking lot in Houston, Texas.
Bullets passed my face, literally. Like, you could hear.
I could tell that the shots were coming from this direction.
Literally, I just could hear the whiz of bullets going through my window.
The shooter firing at what appears to be random.
Appeared we had an active shooter that was engaging people in their vehicles.
Many of the victims were sitting in their cars when they were shot at. Six people are now at the hospital, three others treated and released at the scene. One remains in critical condition. Police responded immediately.
The shooter was engaged by PD and was neutralized.
Shooting and killing the gunman. The Houston Police Department says they will not identify the gunman or specify a motive, but they did reveal that he lives in the neighborhood and this detail.
He is a lawyer.
Investigators are still processing the scene, checking the shooter's car for additional weapons and making sure that there are no other suspects. Maggie Rulli, ABC News, Washington.
All right, I just don't want us to lose our priorities because that's what's happening in Houston. 9 wounded in this shooting in Dallas just today. 2 deadly shootings and a carjacking, which has harrowing details. And then, of course, this shooting in Seattle on Friday night, which we've hardly been talking about because we're talking about the debate. 5 people dead. They described the shooter as Hispanic early on, and now we know he is a Turkish immigrant. He had photos on his blog of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who is the inspiration for many of the Islamist Western shooters. And there's more to say about that, but could I just say that America is in turmoil, and it really is a matter of life and death. No wonder 100 million people are expected to tune in tonight, because so much rides on the outcome of this election, maybe restoring order, making our streets safe again. And so all eyes are on Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, and I've asked Matt Boyle, who's the senior Washington editor for Breitbart, to join us because he's right there on the scene. And Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sandy. Good to talk with you.
Hey, describe the atmosphere there. Just describe it.
You know, I haven't gotten inside yet. They've got the whole city blocked off, so I'm still working my way around to try to get inside the debate place here at Hofstra in Hempstead, New York. It's on Long Island, about an hour outside Manhattan. But ultimately speaking, you know, your opening there, just put this in perspective. This election is the choice couldn't be clearer. Again, if you want to stop terrorism, you want to keep our streets safe, the choice is clear. Donald Trump is the guy. I mean, he can get this stuff done, and he's winning right now. He's surging in the polls. We're seeing Trump continue to show that he can win this election, that he is, basically crossing the threshold necessary of if the election were held today based off current polling. This is our analysis at Breitbart News, but it's also the analysis of the major wire, UPI, similar to the Associated Press. They've also come up with the same analysis that Donald Trump would win the election if it were held today. So what Trump has to do in the debate tonight is he has to show the United States, instead of just tell them, as he's been doing, he has to show the United States that he is presidential and that he can carry himself like a president. And I think if he does that, he's going to get a good boost out of tonight.
Well, there's no question there's been a definite shift in Donald Trump's approach in the last few months since he's got new leadership on his campaign between Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon, who has stepped aside from Breitbart to lead the campaign. It's really been a remarkable turnaround, Matt. Do you have any insights into what you think Donald Trump is going to center on tonight? I mean, the choices, there are so many. What do you think he's going to say? I mean, what's he going to see right now? What topics?
Yeah, I think there's a few things to look for. So first off, I mean, the guy is a businessman. He spent his entire life in business, so he's going to talk about deals that he's negotiated on the world stage and here at home, and how he can use that experience as a businessman to renegotiate our trade deals, to get better budget deals in Washington. Every time one of these budget deals comes down the pike, it's always got everybody up in arms on all different sides of the aisle. So what he's going to do is he's going to start laying out how we can solve those problems, how he's a problem solver, and how that experience translates into a problem solver. But most importantly, and this is interestingly, probably one of the pluses that we saw from him during his primary debates, and I know he got a little bit rough and tumble during those debates, but ultimately speaking, Donald Trump is a master showman when it comes to television, when it comes to presenting himself to his audience. And he understands how to do that. And I think the key thing that he has to get across tonight with 100 million people watching is that he has to show them that he is calm, cool, collected, and ready to be president of the United States. And if he can do that, then he can use the television and the cameras and the situation around him, the moderators and his interactions with Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee, then I think he can come across as a winner tonight, and he can get a bump out of the polls tonight. So I mean, look, anything can happen in the next few hours here, so we don't know what's going to happen, but ultimately speaking, I think those are the things to look for.
You know, Matt, Mrs. Clinton, when she's healthy, which is a whole other issue, is a formidable opponent when she's on her game. She knows how to debate. She knows how to remember details. She got great facility with lying. She can move on a dime change. She can sound very convincing. She can sound calm. If that Mrs. Clinton comes out and if she's healthy tonight, I think, honestly, I think Donald Trump's going to have his hands full. I really do think but if she doesn't feel well, if she falters, then I think he'll, it's going to be his night. But it's kind of I'm sure everybody's watching to see how she's going to feel and how she's going to perform and if she's going to pull this off. Do you know who the audience is going to be?
Well, I think the audience will be quiet. That's their expectation, according to the Presidential Debate Commission. But ultimately, you're right about Hillary Clinton. I mean, look, she's been in politics her entire life. This debate is hers to lose. She's supposed to win tonight, and she's supposed to win resoundingly. So the fact that Trump even has a chance, is got to be troubling to her and her people. But ultimately speaking, she should win this debate. It should be hers to win. Her career in politics, she's been in politics for the better part of 3 or 4 decades now. So she's had plenty of experience in these types of debates. She should win, but if she doesn't, it will be catastrophic for her campaign.
Matt, I'm just curious to know what you're hearing, the buzz about Lester Holt. There's so much discussion. He's the moderator tonight, and so much has been said about how he should be fact-checking both the candidates, especially Donald Trump. They really don't hide their feelings about that. The press doesn't. What are you hearing, and what do you expect from Lester Holt tonight?
Well, look, we heard a lot of the similar buzz going into that National Security Commander-in-Chief forum with Matt Lauer. I thought Matt Lauer did a fantastic job in asking tough, probing questions of both candidates, as we should expect out of anybody in the media, but also knowing where to draw the line, and not insert himself into the process. So we'll look to see if Lester Holt goes down the road of, professional journalists like Matt Lauer or, media hit person like Candy Crowley did last cycle. And Candy Crowley's career is obviously over because she decided to play fact checker on the spot. So ultimately speaking, it remains to be seen. But the Presidential Debate Commission chair appeared on national television this weekend and said that it is not the role of the moderators of these debates to be instant fact checkers. It's the role of the candidates to hold each other accountable. The moderators should seek to insert themselves at a very minimal level, just to prompt discussion. And so ultimately speaking, we'll see if Lester Holt decides to be a journalist tonight or decides to be a social justice warrior for the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Do you know where the questions are coming from? I can't remember. Are they coming from Facebook? I'm sure they're not coming from the audience. How are they generating these questions?
Yeah, they're not coming from the audience. I think that they might take some from Facebook, in terms of culling social media responses. And a lot of them are going to come from Lester Holt. So from I'm sure his team at NBC News is helping him. Look, the guys at NBC News in their news department, they can do the news, right? They're not entirely biased. So there's a chance here that Lester Holt could do a really good job and we could be really impressed with him. There's also a chance that he could go down the road of somebody like a Stephanopoulos, who obviously isn't allowed to moderate debates right now after his performances last cycle, and Candy Crowley, whose career is finished, right? She's no longer the host of CNN's State of the Union. So that's the question that Lester Holt, I mean, who just literally assumed the NBC Nightly News chair after Brian Williams' mistakes, will he decide to go down the road of, you know, again, Mr. Fact Checker and do the bidding of Hillary Clinton, or will he, you know, keep himself out of it and be a fair and impartial and arbiter of the debate? That's a tough place for moderator to be. I understand, you know, and I kind of feel his plight, if you will. It's a tough position to be in for a journalist to be moderating a debate like this. I understand where Lester Holt is, and I feel his pain. But, you know, it's a tough call, and I hope that he stays out of it. I hope that he doesn't get involved in petty personal, you know, squabbles, because that could really hurt himself down the road.
Yeah, it's a no win. Either way, it's like he cannot win. It's almost like you might pray as a journalist that you don't get picked to be the moderator. Matt, we're almost out of time, but I just practically speaking, as a reporter who has access, what is that like? I'm sure that there's tons of traffic. I'm sure there are lines. I'm sure it's difficult to navigate. How does that work? Do you have, because of your press pass, do you just get right in, or how hard is
it
for you?
Well, I mean, you know, we're at Breitbart, are a pretty big media organization, so we apply through the Presidential Debate Commission. I've got four of my fellow staffers here, so there's five of us from Breitbart that are going to be here at the debate tonight. A lot of the other media outlets do the same thing. It's a constant fight. Though the mainstream media would certainly like to see to see Breitbart not be here. But you know, one of the things that, you know, we're constantly fighting for is, because we have an audience out there among the conservative grassroots that is formidable in size. I mean, we've got 33 million monthly readers, according to the unique IP addresses around the world, that are coming to our website, and that's a big deal. And that's why they can't stop us. So the thing that people can do to keep us fighting is to keep reading Breitbart, keep going to our website, because if you go to Breitbart.com, then they can't shut us down if we've got the numbers.
Matt, you know what's really funny to me? Well, funny in a, you know, sardonic sort of way, is that Donald Trump has actually chosen people to surround him who are more conservative than I, in my recent life, any so-called conservative candidate so far. He has surrounded himself. He doesn't care. He doesn't care that Breitbart is known as being, you know, on the right. He doesn't care that Kellyanne Conway is also. He doesn't care that the policy people, so many of them surrounding him, are just, from not my perspective, the best of the best, but are cooties to the mainstream Republicans. And he doesn't care. And so that's why this is really an amazing, amazing kind of event. Do you know what?
Yeah, I would say that the Trump campaign, I mean, is in any recent history of a Republican nominee for president, you know, I mean, maybe dating back to maybe better than Reagan. I mean, but I mean, ultimately speaking, you know, especially definitely since Reagan, with Bush's, the Dole and Romney and McCain. I mean, this is the best campaign that we've seen on the Republican side for conservatives and grassroots. Hands down, they've got, you know, Stephen Miller, Senator Sessions, his top advisor, has been working the campaign since November.
Leonard Leo of the Federalist. Yeah, it's an amazing lineup. And of course, but Hillary Clinton is a formidable opponent, and half of the American people are supporting her at this point. They are running neck and neck. So tonight will be stunning. In fact, I read a poll today that half of America's likely voters are waiting to see the debate tonight to decide who they're going to vote for. Matt Boyle of Breitbart, it's Breitbart.com. Matt, we'll look for you in the audience, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us. This is Sandy Rios.
Since September 11th, 2001, America has been at war. And that's about all anyone can say with certainty about a conflict that has cost 7,000 American lives and almost $2 trillion. As long as the most basic strategic questions, such as who is the enemy and what are we fighting, remain unanswered, victory is impossible. Yet this war is eminently winnable if we remove our ideological blinders and apply basic strategic principles. Our enemy is the global jihadi movement, a modern totalitarian ideology rooted in the doctrines and martial history of Islam. America has defeated totalitarian enemies before. Providing a desperately needed dose of clarity, counterterrorism expert Dr. Sebastian Gorka shows how we can do it again in a recent talk at FRC headquarters in Washington, D.C. Dr. Gorka's bracing, troubling, but ultimately encouraging lecture, entitled Defeating Jihad, the Winnable War, can be viewed at frc.org/war.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The NCAA is taking their ball and going home. When North Carolina passed a common sense law requiring that the use of bathrooms in government buildings correspond with one's biological sex, corporations, entertainers, and sports leagues sought to punish North Carolina for daring to oppose the LGBT agenda. And now the NCAA is piling on, stating they will pull 7 college sports championship tournaments out of the state. However, if the NCAA thinks men and women should share the same locker rooms and bathrooms, why are men's and women's sports teams separate? If teams are separated by sex, why not bathrooms? Pray for the courageous leaders of North Carolina who have not bowed to these cultural bullies, and also tell the NCAA to stop pushing their radical agenda. Call the NCAA at 317-917-6222. That's 317-917-6222. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I'm filling in for Tony Perkins today on Washington Watch. It's a pleasure to have you listen. Always an honor. Tonight is the debate. Are you going to watch it? I kind of think you might be. We certainly do need to tune in. Some people are still kind of on the fence and not clear. While I think the polls are tightening and many people are making up their minds and things are changing, it's amazing to me that even in blue states, Donald Trump is moving ahead. In Minnesota, he's tied with Hillary. Minnesota, very blue Minnesota. Pennsylvania, he's tightening. And North Carolina is a swing state, but the polls are tightening there too. You know, and with all of the riots in the street at Charlotte and the shootings and the civil unrest, it's and also the bathroom issue coming out of North Carolina, one wonders, you know, what effect this is going to have on North Carolina voters. But the race is tightening so far. And so even in Colorado, according to polls, Donald Trump has taken a 4-point lead, and that's amazing. So Ohio, Donald Trump has a lead. And, of course, Ohio is one of the very important swing states. It has so many electoral votes, and it's not, you know, in the last several elections, it's been the state, one of the main states that people have been watching to see what's going to happen. Tonight, of course, is the debate at Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. And this morning I heard Bill Hemmer do an interesting kind of reminder of what got us to this point. And I'd like for you to listen to it because it helped me to go back to Let's Listen.
He was the political outsider, bounding on stage 13 months ago in a performance that was far from conventional.
So our leaders are stupid. Our politicians are stupid. That's what's happening, whether you like it or not.
Nearly 25 million Americans watched as a new political fire was lit.
Our country is out of control. People are pouring across the southern border. I will build a wall. It'll be a great wall.
Donald Trump took his in-your-face style and then vanquished, one by one, all 16 Republican opponents.
Don't worry about it, Don't worry about it, little Marco.
I'm at 42 and you're at 3, so far I'm doing better.
You started off over here, Jeff. You're moving over further and further. Pretty soon you're going to be off the end.
Like, you're the lion guy up here.
I've given my answer, Lion Ted. I've given my answer.
When the debate season was over, the New York billionaire proved he was a tough target to hit on stage. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton still had work to do.
Let's go forward. Let's win the nomination. And in July, let's return as a unified.
Bernie Sanders would not go away easily. Some believe, though, he was doomed the night he declared this.
The American people are sick and tired of hearing about your emails.
But Clinton showed in those lesser watch debates that she could go head-to-head with anyone. Remember this 8 years ago?
I was fighting against those ideas when you were practicing law and representing your contributor, Resco, in his slum landlord business in inner city Chicago.
Eventually, Sanders, running out of time and needing delegates, would concede.
I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party.
And now, two giant figures will be on stage together. Who will get the better in round one? It's the kind of contest that is only made in America.
All right, well, isn't that interesting? Doesn't that take us back in time? And how time moves fast. Things change, and I hate to use the word evolve, but events do evolve, unlike, you know, animals. And so we're watching all of these shifts in public opinion, the shifts in our own views, as we head toward this debate tonight. The election is getting so very close, and really there is so much at stake. I was walking precincts in Fairfax County, Virginia on Saturday, asking people questions, and it's very interesting. You know, it's just very interesting. Even in the D.C. area, Northern Virginia, you don't see a lot of Hillary Clinton signs. You know, when Barack Obama was running, you saw they were everywhere. And the signs on cars, but you hardly see any. And people don't really want to talk about it. It was amazing, the comments that I heard at the door. And many people are waiting, indeed, for this debate tonight. Now, in hearing that little montage by Bill Hemmer, and by the way, that was a courtesy of Fox News, it reminded me, of course, of the offensive things that Donald Trump said and did to Ted Cruz, which was notably upsetting to me and to many people who were supporting him, who felt that he was the strongest social conservative who could prevail in this race. And so when Donald Trump came after him and started calling him a liar, it was very offensive. When he did the things that he did about his father, he said the things about his wife, very offensive, hard to get past. And it's been hard for Senator Ted Cruz to get past that himself, and tons of pressure on him to come out and endorse Donald Trump in spite of the personal insults to his wife and family. And so it was not an easy path for Ted Cruz. Many people behind the scenes here had been encouraging him and encouraging Donald Trump to apologize, to privately apologize, to make this right. Well, I can't say that I know what went on behind the scenes, except that I know there were moves in that direction. And then last Friday, Ted Cruz came out with a Facebook post, and he said, after many months of careful consideration of prayer and searching my own conscience, I've decided that on Election Day, I will vote for the Republican nominee, Donald Trump. He said, whatever path I went down, there were going to be people who were dismayed. There was no option that wouldn't result in people being deeply, deeply unhappy. Well, there are mixed responses to Senator Cruz's decision to support Donald Trump. It wasn't an easy decision for him, no doubt. But he understands what's at stake, and so that's why he made this statement. But, the criticism of him still on Twitter, Facebook, is just amazing. You know, he's another, like Lester Holt, he can't get it right. But I think, honestly, it's clear to me that at this point in our history, given our choices and given the situation, the violence we just described, and I'm going to get into that in more detail in the last segment today, that's just breaking out all over the place, the things coming apart at the seams, these are dangerous times. And honestly, I'm not sure we'll have another election to make another choice. I'm not sure. When people say, wait till next time, I don't know that there'll be a next time. And that's the reason why, I think instinctively, millions of people understand that. And that's why they've made the decision that they've made. So prayerfully, we look to tonight and we ask God's favor, His mercy on our nation and His wisdom as we go to the polls. Stay tuned, because coming up next, Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and the host of this show, will join us live from New York. Sandy Rios, back with you in a minute.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Early this week, we get new home sales. New home sales are expected to be down. This is an August number. This lags behind a month. August new home sales expected to be down. Consumer confidence numbers. This is the government consumer confidence number. It comes out on Tuesday, and this number is expected also to go from 101 to 98. So consumer confidence looking like it is going to be down. Wednesday, a very important number, durable goods. Durable good number is expected to be a negative 0.5%. That is X. Transportation. It's expected to be a negative 0.5%. By the way, it was a positive 1.5% in the month of July. This is an August number as well. That would be about a 2% swing. That would be pretty significant. And of course, this will be weighing on GDP, third quarter GDP number. Speaking of GDP, on Thursday, we get the final look at second quarter GDP, and it looks like it's going to be running around 1.3%, or at least that's what they expect, 1.3%. That is well below the Obama normal of 2%. And I find it hard to believe, frankly, that it could be 1.3%, but they're not going to let it go down 1%, below 1%, where it probably belongs. I would be surprised from a political perspective. And of course, these numbers are not political, if you believe that. But nonetheless, we're expecting 1.3%. That is still anemic at best. So we'll be looking at that very, very closely. That's a big number as we head into the next couple of weeks. Pending home sales coming out Thursday. Pending home sales expected to be down as well. Personal income and personal spending coming out Friday. Two very important numbers.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Governor Reagan, again, typically is against such a proposal.
Governor, there you go again.
But can you get things done? And I believe I can.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You know, the Cold War's been over for 20 years.
Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?
That takes us back in time because debates, you know, you hardly ever remember what candidates talk about when it comes to policy, but you do remember moments like when Al Gore came out from behind his podium and came over to stand and sort of tower over George W. Bush thinking he would intimidate him. It didn't work, and George W. Bush handled it beautifully. That's what most people remember, and it was not a good moment for Al Gore. Well, one wonders, with all of the variables tonight and given the personalities and the complications of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, will something like this happen? Probably, no doubt. Tony Perkins is joining me, and of course, he's the host of this show. This is Washington Watch, and this is Sandy Rios filling in for Tony. Tony is live. I hope he's live. He's at Hofstra University. You are, right, Tony? You have a pulse, right?
I am live. My pulse is beating. My heart is beating. There's a pulse.
Hey, listen,
Sandy, for filling in for me.
Oh, my pleasure, Tony. What's it like up there right now? Are you feeling like, was it hard to get into the venue? And what are you seeing?
Yeah, it actually is. There's a lot of security. It's much like what Cleveland was, but even looks like even more intense than that. A lot of roads closed, so it takes a while to navigate. These things are, frankly, not fun.
Yeah, I know. It's work.
There's a lot of logistics to get in and out of these venues.
Tony, who will the audience be? Who's going to be in that audience besides you and whoever else? Who do you expect to be your seatmates?
Well, I don't know. I think it's a relatively small venue. I think you're going to have donors to both parties and candidates and just political types that are going to be watching. Obviously, a lot of media is going to be at the event tracking it. I mean, this is a pretty significant night. It's probably going to be history-making in terms of the number of people watching. But it's interesting, this actually comes on the anniversary of the first televised debate between John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon. So a lot of history on this date, and I think this is going to be one for the record books.
You know, I did not know that last little factoid. That's interesting. Because as you and I both know, Tony, that was the very first time that we understood that television and radio are very different mediums. Right. And that people that listened on the radio thought that Richard Nixon had won. People that watched television thought that the very photogenic, charismatic John F. Kennedy had won. And that's really what that's what it's come down to. It's going to be the presence on the stage, the way people come across. It's not so much what they say, it's how they present themselves. You have any thoughts about what that's going to look like?
Well, it's we're in a different time where, you know, when this whole cycle began, I thought that Donald Trump's persona was not attractive to people. But that rough, kind of aggressive, non-scripted type of approach actually is what people are looking for in this time when everything the politicians have touched have gone south. So I don't know. It's going to be a little different where he's up against a female. Now, I speak, and that may sound, and I've talked about this in my program before, it may sound chauvinistic, but as one who has been in office and been a candidate and had a debate, a female, you have to approach it slightly different. You don't want to be seen as a bully. And so there's a lot of dynamics at play tonight that he's not faced up to this point. So it'll be a very telling night, a very important night for both of the campaigns.
I'm going to run out of time with you, so I have to ask you. I talked about Ted Cruz's decision to support Donald Trump on Friday in his Facebook post, and I want to know, Tony, what effect do you think that's going to have among evangelical voters?
You know, I don't, at this point, I'm not sure that it's going to have a huge impact. Quite frankly, I think this is more beneficial to Ted at this point to show that he can be a team player, that he knows what's best for the country, and it's not Hillary Clinton. And so I think it does more for him that he is not going to go, you know, just because he didn't get the nomination that he went away mad. It may sway some people, but really what endorsements do, and I speak from experience, endorsements simply affirm decisions that people have made. It doesn't necessarily move a lot of people.
Yes, well, and the polls are moving without, it's just amazing to watch what's happening. Who would have thought? Tony, are you nervous?
Well, I'm. I would say I'm nervous. I'm concerned about the future of the country. A lot is at stake. We have seen in the last 8 years how this administration has basically disassembled our republic, and I think that there is a candidate in this race that, if she is successful, will finish the job. And so I think a lot is riding on the future of this election, namely the republic as we know it.
I think you're right. And I also think that perhaps we need to double down on making people understand that really Christian beliefs are going to be criminalized. Mrs. Clinton has said that out of her own mouth. She said deeply held religious beliefs will have to be changed to accommodate abortion, to accommodate same-sex unions, et cetera. And that's a very dangerous proposition. Tony, we're out of time. But listen, stay safe tonight, and we'll be eager to hear what you think about what happened in that room. And it's a pleasure just having a few minutes with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy.
All right. Well, Sandy Rios filling in for Tony here on Washington Watch. My privilege and my pleasure. And so I'll be back in a second because there's a lot of news, and we're going to continue with some of those terrorist attacks and some of the details of that. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios, well, I'm not in the morning. I'm Washington Watch on AFR Talk.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5. For more information, Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
God has appointed Christians as difference makers in our world. And by voting this election cycle, we can affect positive change for our nation. In 2012, 20 to 30 million Christians did not vote, and we've seen the results. On Election Day, we can make a difference. Voter registration deadline in most states is October 8th. Election Day is November 8th. Be sure you're registered and then vote. Be an informed voter. Visit AFAAction.net to get the AFA Action Voter Guide.
It's Life Chain's 29th year. On October 2nd, stand with thousands of pro-life people throughout the U.S. and Canada in honor of the millions of babies whose lives have been lost to abortion. Life Chain is a peaceful, public witness of standing for 90 minutes, praying for our nation, and to end abortion. To be a part of Life Chain Sunday in your city on October 2nd, go to lifechain.net. That's lifechain.net.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state of South Carolina. 16,000 homes had flood damage, and now you and I get a chance to bless them as they wait for somebody to come and help rebuild their homes. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. We expect thousands of volunteers from around the country to come to that beautiful state. You can come for 3 days, you can come for all 8 days. We love families. We need roofers and electricians and plumbers and carpenters, and we need people like me that are less skilled but just are excited to serve somebody in need. 8 Days of Hope 12, Black River, South Carolina. Hope to see you there.
The trip is October 8th through 15th. Volunteer for a minimum of 3 days at 8daysofhope.com. And if you'd like to help but are not able to go, financial donations are also needed. Sign up or give at 8daysofhope.com.
This all started Friday night at Cascade Mall in Burlington. At 6:52, a gunman walked through Macy's with a rifle, shooting 5 people in the makeup section. A little more than 2 hours later, investigators released the first picture of the suspect. As you can see, it was cropped. Cairo 7 obtained the full image minutes later, and that shows the suspect holding a rifle. At 11:21, the fifth victim, a man, died at Harborview Medical Center. 4 women were killed at the mall. Then yesterday evening, around 6:30, the suspected gunman was taken into custody. Only Cairo 7's cameras were rolling when he walked into the jail last night.
All right, that's a report out of Washington State. And, of course, that's a shooting that has gotten so little press. 5 people are dead. 5 families, 5 spouses, mothers, fathers, sets of mothers and fathers all have lost their loved ones because of a shooting. And by the way, this is Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. And I want to give you an update on this because you might recall that immediately the press told us out of Washington State that this was always a Hispanic. It was a Hispanic man, you know, not related to terrorism, of course. No, it couldn't be. No, we have no reason to believe. Well, now we know that it's Arkan Sitin. He's Turkish. They have they have names that are strange to us. They don't. It's funny how Arabic names are becoming more familiar, but Turkish names are not yet familiar to us. But Turkey is a hotbed of Islamism right now. Not all of them. I have friends that are Turkish, and they, over the years, have become more westernized. But under the leadership of their current president Erdogan, they are moving to Islamism. And so there are some very bad elements coming out of Turkey. All right, so still, that doesn't mean that he's involved in, you know, he's an Islamic radical, right? And they told us he was Hispanic, right? They told us that repeatedly, over and over again, nothing to see. We don't think, no, not related to terrorism. Well, now we hear today that he had a blog with photo posts of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. This is the Islamist who has been writing and stirring up so-called lone wolves, and they're not lone wolves. They're connected to a whole band of brothers, of Islamic brothers, who are intent on jihad and on killing the infidel, and that's you and me. And so now we know, no, he's not so Hispanic. He actually is Turkish, And he's not so innocent. He actually is a follower of Abu Bakr Baghdadi and also Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei. So this is happening over and over again. Police officials tell us, oh, no, no, there's no connection to terrorism. They say that before they know anything. They tell us that they don't tell us when they find out if they have a Middle Eastern or Arabic name. They leave that out. They tell us there's nothing to see. You know, in Minnesota, these things are becoming so frequent we can hardly keep track. It was just a couple of weeks ago when 10 people in a Minnesota mall were shot or stabbed by one of the immigrants from the community there, Dahir Ahmed Adan. And then they're not sure about if that's terrorism. Also, we know that this the New Jersey, New York perpetrator has been studying. He's been in an Islamic school in Pakistan. Remember the FBI told us, oh, he traveled to, you know, some dangerous areas, but we have no reason to believe this is terrorism. It's just, it is absolutely astounding. And I also, just one detail about this Washington, a shooter who killed five people, who was supposedly Hispanic, who now we find is a Turkish immigrant, who now we find is a follower of Abu Bakr Baghdadi. Now five people are dead in that mall, from that mall, almost all women, one man. He wrote on a tweet that he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's an interesting thing that you'll probably never hear, but thought I would mention that. And so then we have this New Jersey terror suspect, and to be really specific about it, he went to get an Islamic education at a Pakistani seminary. 3 weeks. See, the problem is that the FBI, the Defense Department, the CIA, they've all had their manuals scrubbed. The newer agents don't even know anything about Sharia law and that the fact that Sharia law is intrinsic to the Quran. It is the teaching of jihad. It is the teaching of killing or converting the infidel. It is the heart of Sharia. So peaceful Muslims just don't embrace Sharia, which is troubling for them, and that's why they are often the objects of attacks by Islamists who actually take the Quran verbatim for what it says. And so they didn't pick up on that. Nothing to see here. We're not sure why. You know, just because he yelled Allahu Akbar, we have no reason to believe that it's terrorist-related, but now we know that that's silly. It's just silly. And now we just heard the report that 9 have been wounded in a Houston shooting. Now, this just happened today. They're describing the shooter as, I want to find their phrase. It's something about a disgruntled attorney. He is an attorney. And they are saying something about, here's the quote. Ask if the shooting was an act of terrorism. Interim Police Chief Martha Montalvo said, I'm not ready to confirm that. Now, I looked up Nathan Desai's name. That's the attorney. Desai seems to be an Indian name. So that may not mean that maybe he is a disgruntled attorney. I don't know. But certainly there are jihadists who are Indian. So I don't know. I don't know. But that's in Houston right now, even as we speak. 9 people wounded in this shooting. And then this afternoon, right now in Dallas, a shooting, just a random shooting. People getting out of cars and just killing people. One man killed at a gas station. He's just pumping gas. And he was shot point blank, and they pulled his wife out of the car and stole the car. She wasn't hurt, but they killed him and took his car. Whether that's related to terrorism, I don't know. But honestly, every day now, every week, 3 times a week, 4 times a week. And, you know, Mayor de Blasio of New York tells us this is, he sort of indicates this is kind of the new norm. Nothing to see. The President of the United States says, you know, hey, we're brave, we're strong, we're not going to let this intimidate us. Meanwhile, he does nothing to make us safer. We're supposed to somehow suspend belief and pretend as though this is not a problem. And we're supposed to let law enforcement tell us there's nothing to see. And then the story gets buried. We maybe hear the initial report and then they hush it up. They downplay if it is indeed someone who has a name that's Islamic. they don't report it. If they have connections, they downplay it. And then as soon as they can, they kill the story. You know, what's happened to the New Jersey, New York killer? That just happened last weekend. What's happening to him? We don't know. I'm guessing that what I just told you about him is something that you probably haven't heard. So one point I want to make for sure is that we must not let our hearts get so hardened to these reports that we don't take a moment to let our stomachs turn and the knife go into our hearts. These are lives, and these are our family. This is America, and we cannot let this become business as usual. Related to this, it's interesting to me, today 50,000 or 5,000 federal immigration officers threw their endorsement behind Donald Trump. It's the National Immigration and Customs Enforcement Council. Because, of course, I know why. Because they're seeing the carelessness with which this administration is handling our borders and the people that are coming in. And they are, you know, feeling the brunt of it, trying to protect us. So are law enforcement. You know, many of our law enforcement agents are just, they can't help what they don't know. I know people personally, national security experts, who are going all over the country and giving briefings, and sometimes they have to brief privately. They have to hide it from our federal leaders because they could get in trouble for actually reading and studying about what Sharia law actually teaches. They could be accused of being Islamic and be in terrible trouble. So you see that we have found ourselves in a very difficult spot. I think that the American people understand this better than most politicians, bureaucrats here in Washington who are removed and seem just incapable of understanding the danger. Otherwise, why would they continue? In fact, in this short-term CR that they're getting ready to pass, authorize and spend without any kind of a whimper, millions of dollars to be spent on bringing in thousands more so-called Syrian refugees without the ability to vet them. Why would they do that? Republicans, too. Why would they do that? I want to tell you then, on the other side of this, there are some other real dangers. A man charged, you all know who Pamela Geller is, right? Those of you in Texas know. Because Pamela Geller, listen, she's hard as nails. And certainly on the Islamic issue, she's hard as nails. She's Jewish. She's conservative. She has done as much as anyone in the private sector to expose Sharia and the dangers of radical Islam. And she's the one who has organized these draw a cartoon of Muhammad contest. The last one she did was in Richardson, Texas, where the shooting took place. And the would-be killers of the people that gathered in that place with Pamela would have been killed except for policemen. So Pamela's been quiet this last few months. You may notice I haven't heard anything about her. Well, maybe because out of Boston, here's a report. A man charged with plotting to help the Islamic State group pled guilty on Thursday to conspiracy charges, including a plot to behead conservative blogger Pamela Geller. Nicholas Rovinsky of Warwick, Rhode Island, admitted he conspired with two Massachusetts men to kill Geller and attempted to recruit others to carry out additional violent attacks in the United States. Prosecutors said Rovinsky plotted with David Wright of Everett and Wright's uncle Usama Rahim of Boston to kill Geller. It's Garland, Texas. I said Richardson. I'm sorry, it's Garland. Assistant U.S. Attorney Stephanie Siegman said Rovinsky told authorities after his arrest that he, Wright, and Rahim had agreed to kill Geller, who's from New York. Siegman said Rahim later told Wright he wanted to go after those boys in blue, a reference to police. Rahim, who had been under surveillance, was shot and killed by authorities in June of 2015 after he lunged at them with a knife when they approached him in Boston. And on it goes. Okay, so Pamela Geller, an American citizen who simply speaks the very difficult truth about Islam, is now, she has to have round-the-clock guards. I know this for a fact because her life is in danger. And then what happened to the cartoonist? Remember, the cartoon that supposedly caused the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens and the three others, Ty Woods and the others, in Benghazi. It was a video, right? This silly video. Did you see it? Did you ever see it? It was looked like a South Park production. It was just so rudimentary. And it was produced by a Coptic Christian who goes, his name is Nakula Basili Nakula. And of course you know that he was arrested immediately. He has served time in prison. He's lost everything. His life has been threatened. And now he lives in a homeless shelter in Buena Park, California. And he basically said, is quoted as saying, "I don't believe in democracy anymore. I don't think there is such a thing as freedom of speech in the United States." I don't know if you know this, but allow me to explain that the United Nations and the Organization of Islamic States has a proposal called Rule 1618. And it's been adopted by many nations around the globe, many in the United Nations, and it is a thing that basically says there will be no criticism of Islam or the Prophet. Remember when President Obama, as soon as he was elected this last time, made a speech in the UN and he said that the future does not belong to those who criticize the Prophet? And remember we said, what? What did he say? What did he say? The President of the United States just said the future does not belong to those that criticize the Prophet? He was referring to this worldwide effort to criminalize any effort or any free speech effort to criticize Islam, Sharia, and the Prophet, our president. But further, Mrs. Clinton, in an effort, not an effort, but in her cooperation with the Organization of Islamic States, she's very involved with them. She works with them all the time. And she made a public statement that it was unfortunate that we have a First Amendment in the West, certainly in America. It will be hard for us to implement Rule 1618. But we can use the old, this is her words, the old-fashioned methods of shaming and peer pressure. We maybe can't outlaw it because of our inconvenient First Amendment protection on free speech, but we could stop criticism of the Prophet by peer pressure and shaming. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a lot at stake in this election. And regardless of our preferences, maybe we don't, our candidates are not perfect. Donald Trump is certainly not a perfect man. Many of us grieved watching him say certain things. It was very difficult. But we must remember the big picture, and that is the loss of free speech, the loss of religious freedoms, the legalization of abortion in unbelievable ways will certainly be the next step if the left takes over the White House and the Congress in this next phase of the election. It will be a different world, not to mention the $20 trillion in debt, the continued, I blame Republicans in the House and the Senate as much for that as I do Democrats, I have to tell you. But we have to do something different. We have to pay attention to who we're electing. And tonight, of course, is this debate. It starts tonight, and so wherever you are, I know you're going to want to watch it. And we need to be praying for our country, not just taking action, not just talking, but praying that God will have mercy and will spare us and will give us wisdom so that we can pass on a free country to our children. All right, well, this has been Sandy Rios. I'm on from 8 to 9 in the morning on Eastern Standard Time here on AFR Talk. And I really do appreciate you listening, and I thank Tony Perkins for allowing me to fill in for him on Washington Watch. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.